podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Fix with me, Jamie Holm. Tonight's show is brought to you in association with Siena Steps. Now, I think it's fair to say it's been a pretty busy day in the world of football with the news that Alisson Becker has now joined Fabinho in committing himself to Liverpool long term, which is fantastic news. Not so much fantastic news for one of our guests tonight. Jack Grealish looks to be on the verge of a move to Manchester City for a British record transfer fee, with ex-Red Danny Ings now on his way to Villa Park. So there's been lots going on, so lots to sink our teeth into tonight. So on the agenda we have Grealish and Kane transfer rumours, the news that we might be getting our proper football back with the very welcome news that there's going to be some changes to VAR for the coming season. What we're also going to do is we're going to give some of our players to watch for the season ahead and also give our reaction to the Alisson contract news. So, delighted to say, joining me tonight, we have Gav, we have Keith, and we really didn't plan it this way, honestly, Conan. We have Conan Doherty of the fantastic Villa podcast. I'm going to come to you first, of course, Conan, because I just want to check, are you okay, mate? Because it's probably been a rough day for you, has it?
It's been an absolutely fucking terrible day, to be honest, lads. I'm in the pits here. I'm trying to figure out words to put my relationship with Jack Grealish in a justified manner. Like, I've been obsessed with this boy since he was 18. Like, remember Ireland beat Germany in 2015? I found an old Vine. Remember Vines, like, where I was changing my computer in work, the background, the screensaver, from Jack Grealish to the Ireland-Germany game? Like, you know, this is when he was a teenager. Like, I had him as the background in work. Like, how sad is that? You know, my girlfriend said to me one day, I said to her, "Oh, guess who won Man of the Match for England again?" And she goes, "Either Jack Grealish and he's brilliant, or not Jack Grealish and everybody's wrong." You know, this is the sort of shit that she's been listening to from me over the years. And I don't know what we're going to talk about actually now going forward, but it's devastating.
It's a happy day for Horsell, is it?
but I'm like, it's awful news. There's no other way to put it.
When you look at it, I suppose, because obviously we look at it through a different lens, you know, and I'm similar to you. I'm a massive Grealish fan. I'm disappointed that arguably Liverpool's biggest rivals for the title, I believe, for the season ahead, have gone and signed, for me, one of the most gifted players in the league. But from a Villa fan perspective, because, you know, Liverpool fans have had it in the past, you know, when big players have come and gone, is this something that you were kind of expecting? Because I know me and you have had a little bit of back and forth, you know, over the last few months when, you know, the rumours were starting to circulate. You were confident that you could potentially keep hold of him. What's the mood like amongst Villa fans? Certainly the Villa fans that listen to your podcast. Is it kind of wishing him the best, or is there a little bit of resentment there?
Oh, like there's definitely resentment. I wouldn't even say it's split, and it's a shame considering how good he's been for the club. But like, I was so confident that he would stay this year. I knew Jack Grealish would leave eventually, but I thought after he stayed last year, when the team had just finished 17th, they were a terrible team that were lucky to stay up in the Premier League. I thought once he stayed, like, and then Villa improved so much last year, that he'll definitely hang around now to see where this project is going. And it's actually just disappointing. Like, you know, if Grealish left when Villa were at their ceiling, when, you know, he was obviously outgrowing the team and the club, and it wasn't as exciting as it is right now with rich owners. And like that's another thing that's disappointed people. Like, for me, it didn't really make any sense to sell him. Because he had four years after his contract, he's going to be worth the same next year, and you're trying to push on. Like, you're by all accounts, Villa want to get into Europe. Like, and the best way to do that is get Grealish. We can't replace him. Never going to get a player that caliber. So it's, I suppose it's just disappointment after he signed last year. People will obviously still wish him well, but I also think the fact that he's gone to Man City hasn't enamored him with anybody. Like, I knew that Jack Grealish would go someday, and I always hoped it would, well, ideally be abroad or be to Liverpool and United. Just classic, clubs with proper legacy. Like, I still remember 10 years ago when Villa were perennially ahead of Man City, just come out of nowhere, can't fill their stadium. Pointless sort of club. Like, you know, it's not a big thing. Like, when you're with Liverpool or City or Villa or Everton, it's more real. And, like, obviously when he's from there as well, he didn't think he would go for City, but sure, that's the modern day.
Keith, what's the Liverpool's fans spin on this? Because I suppose, you know, we look at this and ultimately we just see Manchester City recruiting another top talent for a shed load of cash.
Yeah, I mean, Jono made a comment there that he said, I don't care what other teams do. And I stand by that, to be honest. I don't really care who Man City boy. I think Liverpool have proved, you know, that if we're on it, we will be going for a 90-plus point season, and we have the capability of doing that. So Jack Grealish to Man City, while is an excellent addition, you know, I don't really care what City do. Still, I think too many people panic about what other teams do. I think if you concentrate on your own team and what you do, I think that's the best way to be. But look, Jack Grealish is an excellent player. Now, I'm wondering, Colin, is the fact Dean Smith's a Villa fan, isn't he? He's a local.
Yeah.
Local lad, is would there have been like a gentleman's agreement, you think, even with him, that he'd give them a year and then the writing's on the wall that he was always going to go this summer? Because I know what you're saying, you thought he'd stay, but is it, in some ways, as a Liverpool fan looking in, is it the right time for him to move? You know, Villa are back in the Premier League, they're fairly well established now in the Premier League, they've a rich ownership, the money isn't an issue. Maybe it's the right time. Maybe it's the right time for him to move on.
I thought, like, and I was genuinely trying to remove myself from being so selfish about it all and being just so ingrained in Aston Villa. I was trying to think, if I was in his shoes, what would I do? And I genuinely came to the conclusion that I would have hung on for another year with how big the progression was from the first year in the Premier League to the second year. It was night and day to what it could have been now this year. And again, it would have got all the money he wanted. Like, that would have been looked after. And he would have been 26 next year if Villa didn't qualify for the Champions League. And I just thought, if they did, which was a massive outside bet. In my head, the way this was going to play out, stay a year, see if he gets in the Champions League, won't happen, then he'll leave. But if they had got there, like, one night in Europe with Aston Villa would just mean so much more than playing with Man City. Like, am I being naive, though? Like, am I... I feel like we've sort of become obsessed, you know, with trophies. Like, you know, it's like now... it's the media, but it's almost the Americanization of football. Like, you know, every player and their legacy is judged by how many trophies you put beside their name at the end of it. And they're all told. And Grealish has this in his head. Kane has this in his head. If I don't get whatever amount of numbers beside my Wikipedia page, I haven't done it. Does it matter that much? Like, he goes to Man City.
I think the game's changed, Conan. I agree with you. I'm a football romantic, right? And I always harp back to the likes of, you know, I can only talk with confidence around Gerrard and Carragher, because, you know, they are the last two, in my opinion, of a dying breed. You could now probably put Henderson in that, given his tenure at Liverpool. But I think now with the modern breed of player, I think they will give clubs a certain period of time, like a Kane, like a Grealish, where, to be honest, again, outside of looking in, no emotions, Grealish, as you've said it yourself, has dragged Villa, you know, through tough times. No one can question what he's given to the club. Kane, equally so at Spurs. I think there becomes a tipping point with top players where they have to now ask themselves, am I playing? The Champions League now is the be-all and end-all, in my opinion. Players want to be playing in that elite competition. And in my honest opinion, I think certain players deserve to be playing there. So I think it's now changed where you may get a certain period of time where they will give you their best. And if the cards don't fall, they'll move on. I think we're now looking at a period where potentially you don't have the likes of a one club man anymore, or certainly not in the top levels of the, you know, of European football, because, you know, as soon as a club goes through a little bit of turmoil, money talks, players will be off.
Yeah. I think the way I see it, it's like, He'll win stuff with Man City. Of course he will. It'll be mostly League Cups. He'll win a league or two, might win the Champions League, but it's easier to win with Man City. Like, winning stuff with Man City, now this sounds stupid, so bear with me, winning stuff with Man City isn't an achievement. Like, you know, because it's so fucking easy. It's not an achievement. Obviously it is an achievement, but being good enough to play for Man City is the biggest achievement there. And I'm just been thinking around, like, I know Shearer won the league title, but, you know, can somebody now say to me that Rafael da Silva was better than Shearer, had a better career than him, or, like, you know, because Shearer didn't go to Man United and win all the stuff that he should have won. Like, Shearer had a great career, now he's a legend forever, and he'll be remembered as one of the best players. And yeah, like, I get really passionate about it, because what I've seen as well, and I know, Jamie, you think the same, is, and I work in the media, so I don't want to be one of these people who talks about the media, but, like, these same people who get enraged and embittered and impassioned about the idea of a Super League, they will not respect a player properly until he's playing for one of those teams. You know, like, so I've had it for years. Like, Grealish doesn't get the credit that he deserves until he's playing for one of these teams. He'll get it now, but that's annoying that he had to play for one of those teams to get it.
You make a good point, because, Gav, you've got a tweet there that come through from Oliver Kay. And it's what you're saying, Conan. It's just this, these narratives that come out about players that maybe aren't in the traditional top six. And I can I just say, I hate the term top six now, because yeah, I think there's some that are in that be, you know, really shouldn't be. But you look at this that came out today from Oliver Kay, right? And it got a bee in my bonnet, right? So he says, obviously, Grealish is off to City, huge talents, but thing is, till now, there's always been a but with Grealish. If he's to succeed at Manchester City, he's going to have to become a more complete player. Now, that to me, I don't get that. What does he need to do to become a more complete player? He's playing in a lesser team. He's delivered consistently. I think, Gav, you've got a stats comparing Grealish to Kevin De Bruyne over the last season. You know, Kevin De Bruyne is playing with elite footballers. Manchester City are experts at creating space. They dominate the ball. And when you look at what Jack Grealish's output was versus the likes of a Kevin De Bruyne, they were neck and neck. So this stuff must drive you mad as a Villa fan.
Every time it happens, I always just come to the conclusion that they're not watching. They're not watching him. Gareth Southgate's not watching him. Like, these journalists aren't watching him. And I listened to it. Like, as I said, I've had this for a long time, right? But we are not even 1 year into Jack Grealish playing for England. He didn't get an England call-up until August 31st. You know, I think we might have a tweet there of that, Gav, like, when he finally got his call-up to England on August 31st because somebody pulled out injured. And then what did he do? He went on a string of man of the match, performances, because that's what he does. But that was only because Southgate was forced to watch him in front of his eyes. But then even then, when he went on that run and he was shown that he was obviously good enough at that level, I was listening to all the football podcasts during the summer for the Euros, and it was just a string of these journalists lining up to give a myriad of, I would say, pathetic reasons for why do the England fans want Grealish in the team so much. And honestly, they went from everything to because he's one of them, he's a lad, to England fans are racist, which is one excuse that I heard. And then they give reasons for why he's not. And not one person just said, actually, because he's very good. You know, it was all these reasons about what he might not have in his game, because, as you say, he is playing with a weaker team. And I just think that proves all the more how he's able to constantly cope with that pressure and constantly perform with shit players around him. He's playing with Neil fucking Taylor sometimes on the left wing. Like, that's what Jack Grealish is doing. Like, you know, and he's looked to the whole time to get Villa in the Championship, to get Villa safe in the Premier League, to push them on, and he was delivering every week.
Gav, working hard in the background there, producing, doing a splendid job, I may say so myself, mate. Yeah, apologies. So what happens, guys, we do these shows, and Gav obviously is doing all the hard work in the background, and he says, look, if you've got any stats or you got any pictures or you got anything that you want to send me for tonight's show, and then the three of us just start boop, 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 pinging, yeah, absolutely pinging stuff at him. So, yeah, we're in the doghouse, but now top work as always, Gav. In terms of Grealish, one of the things that I suppose has been surprising is a bit of a narrative is what is Pep going to do with him? Because Pep has a lot of firepower at his disposal. Pep likes City to move the ball quickly. Jack Grealish is notorious for taking a lot of touches on the ball. One of the narratives, whether I agree with it or not, is that he might slow them down. He'll certainly be able to win, progress with the ball and win free kicks higher up the pitch. What do you see Pep doing with Jack Grealish? And do you think that this means the likes of a player that I'm a big fan of, Bernardo Silva, potentially going out the door?
I'm not too sure about players going out the door. You know, it looks like they will get Grealish for somewhere between 80 and 100 million, and they're rumoured to be, they're tapping up Harry Kane, you know, simple as that. We'll get on to him later, but you've seen a progression in City over the last, you know, when Liverpool won the league the season before last, Liverpool just blew everyone away, and City looked very fragile because they were very open, they were very easy to get at, and, you know, if, I don't think they came from a goal behind all season. There was some mad stat that when they conceded, they were gone and they were open and people could just get at them and they looked a bit soft. And you've seen it last season, especially in that period when they went, I think they won 14, 15 in a row. You could see a massive change in the way they played. It was much more controlled. They weren't so gung ho. They didn't make the pitch as big. They were much more compact. And I think that suits Jack Grealish. I hate to say that, but we're all terrified saying about Jack Grealish now because Colin is here. I think it suits them. I think they're going to look to progress a little bit more in what they tried to do last season. And by that I mean, I don't think they're going to rely on their pace as much. I don't think they're going to rely on that quick transition as much. I think they're going to look to control. I think they're going to actually look to do what Liverpool done in 1920. So Liverpool in 1920, if you remember, 17, 18, 18, 19 was just outrageous football. It was mad. It was great. We all watched it. But if you watch them in 1920, Liverpool, they had their centre-backs high up the pitch because they could rely on their pace. And they just pen teams in and they pressurised them to the point where the other teams gave in and said, look, we're just going to sit back. And when you sit back, you need players to unlock you. You don't need the pace, you need players to unlock you. And I think that's where Grealish comes into the equation. Because the one thing I've noticed about Grealish is people will talk about him going over and all, loads of players do that. But his eye for a pass and his weight of pass is exceptional for me. I think even when he's on the run, he can see a pass. And I've seen him put their striker, whose name is going to be head, Ollie Watkins, put him through on numerous occasions just by one look and glance. And it could be 20, 30, 40 yards and he puts him in, or in tight situations. He's making stuff happen for Aston Villa and for England at times. So while I think, you know, see, you're playing another sport when it comes to finances and football at this stage, I think he actually does suit them, and I think he's part of a progression, because we'll get on to Kane later. We've seen Kane in the last year become a bit more of a, you know, deeper number nine and a bit more creative and a bit more looking for his wide men, and I think he suits City as well for what they're trying to do. But when it comes to the transfer itself, Jamie, you know, what can you do? There's nothing you can do, and people will say it's sour grapes if you say anything wrong, and it's not really on my part. I know what City are. I know what City were. I know what they are now. And no matter how many words I say about it, it's not going to change what we're looking at now and what we're looking at into the future, especially with a pandemic and Pep telling you he couldn't afford a striker 6 months ago, and now he's looking at possibly putting 250 million quid on the table for two forwards. So it's just one of those. But I think Grealish, people might tell you that, oh, will he walk, will he not? He most definitely will walk because he's a brilliant footballer.
Yeah, and I think the key thing, you know, when good players play with better players, it's all about speed of thought. And I say this with the ultimate respect to Aston Villa. The fact that he's going to be playing with better players at Manchester City, he does things on instinct. He pops balls around corners. There's players there. There's quicker movement. There's better runners. Everything's first time. So I actually think you're going to see him go up a level. And I've got a funny feeling he might be played as a number eight or somewhere in the middle where he can retain the ball. Because I think that's one of his biggest strengths is keeping the ball in condensed areas. Keith, I'm going to come to you because, Conan, you'll be pleased to know, mate, that we're going to move on from Jack Grealish, mate. You got through it. You know, you're okay. Hopefully it wasn't too painful. But we're going to come on to another big money transfer for City, which is the rumoured transfer of Harry Kane. And Keith, I'm going to come to you because one of the things that stuck out to me is, it's, you know, aside from the money that City are potentially spending, because look, it's theirs to spend however they want, it seems very strange that Harry Kane has been given some pretty poor advice for me. And I think Gav, you've got a tweet, it was of a Jamie Carragher article where he made comparisons between maybe the period where Steven Gerrard was thinking of leaving Liverpool, and you ultimately want to keep your reputation intact. From an outsider's looking in, it looks like he's been poorly advised at the moment with him staying away from the training centre.
It's the Harry Kane's a strange one, because I don't want to keep going down the same rabbit hole, but the narrative around Harry Kane going on strike compared to other players who've done the same thing is pretty ludicrous. And Jamie Carragher saying that, you know what, don't sully your name. Harry Kane's already done the dirty deed here. Do you know what I mean? He's already gone on strike, essentially, and told Spurs he won't be back. He's playing a game. It's similar really to Grealish at Villa. You know, he could have, as Conan said, he could have stayed on, but there was a risk of him becoming a Matt Le Tissier type of character, staying there for a long time and maybe not getting the silverware. And Kane's in the same sort of boat as well. It's interesting that Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville are doing a lot of defence of Harry Kane and how he's going about things. I don't know. I think Harry Kane's a pretty... he's a bit of a shady character for me. I don't think loyalty is one of his main attributes. And, you know, why should it be? Because football now, clubs aren't loyal to players, so players probably shouldn't be loyal to clubs. And that's something that fans, maybe we have to take a step back and realise. But, you know, the advice that he's getting, so I think Harry Redknapp came out and said, you know, you have to watch when you go up against Daniel Levy, because you can try our best to act the maggot to get out of there. But if they set a price for him, it's up to City to pay that price. And if they're setting a price of 160 million, which is rumour, I don't know. Look, I don't know what the figure will be. They're not going to be able to do a deal with him. Whether Harry Kane sort of tries to throw his toys out with a pram or stamp his feet, I don't know how far that'll get with the Spurs ownership group. The one thing about them is they're desperate for money. With the new stadium that they built, the pandemic, it hit them very hard. And in one sense, you could say, well, they might take a reduced deal, but Levy's previous is that he will not take less. You know, we've seen it with players. They've got top dollar for Gareth Bale, Luka Modric, and they held for all their players really that he sold. They've done good deals on, and I can't see this one being any different. And touching briefly back on the Grealish thing with Conan as well, the important thing is how you spend your money when you get these deals. And Villa look to have done sensible business, in my opinion. They brought in Buendia, they brought in Danny Ings, and they brought in Leon Bailey. You invest your money well, and it'll be interesting to see what Spurs do with the Harry Kane deal, because I don't know how much money is going to go to Nuno for transfers based. You know, if they get 160, I can't see that being reinvested in their squad. But I don't know where Kane, you know, thinks he goes with it, because the talk, again, like I said, the narrative that he needs to go out and with his pride intact and all this sort of thing, I don't think Harry Kane really gives a rat's arse about that. I think he just wants out of there, and wants to go to Manchester City. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what he does there. I think he gets out. Obviously, he gets his way, but I don't think it'll be for less than what Daniel Levy wants. It may not be 160, but I can't see it being too much below that, because he drives a hard bargain and he will not back down. But if he goes to Man City and Grealish goes to Man City, as you have said, you know, I think Gav, you said the 250 million on a couple of forwards. The thing with City, they've done great last season. They won the league. They don't have an established forward line. So there is vacancies to fill there. And Kane goes in, and Jamie, you said you think Grealish plays in an eight. Maybe he does, but the likes of Sterling look to be out of favour there with Guardiola last season. Mahrez was in doing bits. Foden obviously is looks like he's the next one in, and Bernardo Silva looked to be out, you know, falling fell. Gabriel Jesus. So there's loads of opportunities for lads in there. But again, I go back to the narrative of Man City signing these players. We only play them twice a season. Do you know what I mean? If we manage them in the games we play them, I don't really care who they sign. You know, Sergio Aguero was a great striker for Man City. Done damage to us many a time. Harry Kane is a great striker for Spurs, and I think will be a great striker for Man City as well. But I think it will be interesting to see the media narrative around him forcing his way out, as opposed to Grealish, who... I know Conan said there's a bit of bad blood with the Villa fans now. I don't know. I don't think he handled himself too bad.
I don't know. No, like it's just suppose it's raw at the minute. Like,
yeah,
you know,
100%. Yeah,
to be fair, you've only found this out today, and you've been wheeled into a podcast. And you know, I'd be throwing things at the screen if I was you. So don't worry, mate.
Online, it seemed to be very, you know, a lot of the Villa stuff that I'd seen online was like, Judas and all this sort of stuff. I don't get that. I think,
yeah, and there's a big reaction to that as well. Like, so that's common. Like, you know, the backlash to people having a backlash on them.
Yeah,
like the contrast is night and day. You're talking about Kane. I think Kane's any chance he wanted to preserve his dignity or integrity was gone when he started walking around a golf course with Gary Neville for his YouTube channel, you know, and just talking openly about wanting to go and talking about his legacy and things like that.
Swearing on his kid's life that he's got a touch on a ball that he clearly didn't.
Yeah,
like that's just like this is Harry Kane. Harry Kane's an asshole. Like if we're being serious, like, you know, the way he plays football, like he claims goals that aren't his. He bends his back in an attempt to break players' necks, apparently. You know, he's one of those boys, and this is actually the worst sometimes. He's crying when the ball isn't out of play. He's pretending like it is out of play. I hate that. I think that's just so weak. Like, you know, he'll have his hand up pretending to somebody it's out of play. Like, this is the sort of stuff that Kane does over and over and over. He's not a likable character, and he's probably a good match for City. And just a comparison, like, you know, Grealish was in training this week, and you know, he was there taking pictures with the fans and chatting to them, and like he's especially great with disabled children, because I think a few of his relatives have conditions, and like, you know, he's just being himself and being comfortable. Whereas I don't know what Kane, if he is staying away on purpose, I don't know what he thinks he's going to achieve, because Keith mentions Daniel Levy. Like, Daniel Levy isn't going to take 10 million off the price tag because Harry Kane hasn't trained for 2 days. Like, if anything, he's just making him more money because he's going to find him a week's wages.
I think you're right. Just Marcus Barnes has a super chat in here, and it's a mention for a speedy recovery for Fofana from Leicester. Apparently, yeah, he's had a shocking challenge on him tonight in a game, and it looks like a dislocation or a break was the words I seen just before we come online.
I had my leg broken exactly the same way, Gav. He's gone in for the tackle, and the guy's tried to scissor. So if you do the scissor motion with the legs, he's followed through with the second leg, and his leg's basically in the middle and gone. The technical term is a shithouse tackle, and to do that in pre-season is it's a disgrace.
Well, just on Harry Kane, you know, and Colin's mentioned Gary Neville there, and we put some up on the screen. Believes something significantly wrong must have happened behind the scenes for Harry Kane to go on strike with the player now on collision course with Chairman Daniel Levy. Conan's right. When he's walking around a golf course saying actively that he wants to leave, I think City have just got in his ear and said, listen, we'll offer you, they're going to offer him to some million of the stars. And, you know, and we see clubs do this all the time. Barcelona done it to us with Coutinho, where they've just helped players do this and do that, and it'll happen in the end, and we'll make sure you're looked after. But I think City have picked their time on this, because I think they could have went for Harry Kane last summer. You know, we knew what the writing was on the wall with Aguero, and I think they could have went for Harry Kane, but I think they might have looked at it and went, look, it's a bit more difficult last season, because they had the Champions League the season before. Pochettino leaves, Mourinho comes in, and actually, in fairness, when Mourinho comes in, that they've top four form right through when he's there, you know, in that season. And Harry Kane's probably looking at it going, look, Mourinho's got us going again. You know, he's going to bring in players. Mourinho changed the way Harry Kane played as well, for the better for me. You know, he helped him. He kind of watched his minutes as well, and the amount of running he was doing. You have the new stadium at Spurs. And I think at that time, there was probably too much of a pull towards Spurs for Harry Kane for Man City to seriously go and do it. But they're looking at it now and they're saying to themselves, look, Harry Kane is 28. They've lost Mourinho. They now have Nuno Espirito Santo. The stadium, okay, that's fair enough. I think they're playing European conference football.
Yeah.
I think, and City have just looked and went, now it's the time. Now it's the time, because everything lines up. Now, the only stumbling block I think they're going to have, like Conan says, is Daniel Levy. Because Daniel Levy, the thing about him is, and I've said his name two, three different ways now at this stage, but the thing with him is that he does stuff for spite, in my opinion. And I like it. He stands up for his football club a hell of a lot. And I think the fact that Harry Kane has more or less gone on strike and hasn't returned to training will only make the Daniel Levy turn around and go, well, if you want to play it that way, let's play it that way. And it was 150 last week and it's 170 this week. And I'm just going to keep putting a tariff every time you don't turn up for training. But City will end up paying it because I think they've made certain promises to Harry Kane and are probably ready for the reaction of Tottenham Hotspur as a club. But somebody said in the chat there, they reckon that Spurs will get a player or two. I think that's probably one of the things that's probably just delaying it. I'd say it's literally get one or two players sorted.
What Man City player will go to Spurs? That's the problem with that.
I don't know. I'd say the likes of a Mahrez might. I'd say Mahrez might if he's out. Yeah, I think he would. I think
you've got to think of the London connection as well, though, Keith.
Yeah,
it's something for these foreign lads, it is especially their wives.
No, but it's a year in the Conference League. Do you know what I mean? And it's a short enough career. And if I'm Riyad Mahrez, I'd want the bleeding King's Ransom to be going out there to go to Spurs. And that's the thing. In a normal circumstance, Spurs is an attractive club, Arsenal is an attractive club, but you're going in there at a not very attractive time. Like, I've seen Laporte getting linked, and I've seen Jesus getting linked. You know, no way are they going to take that drop to Spurs at the moment. It'd be interesting to see what players they could get. It might be like a Nathan Aki or something, might be the level of player that they could throw in, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But Gary Neville saying that there, it's like he's putting no blame whatsoever on Harry Kane. He's looking, something happened to Spurs. Something must have happened behind the scenes. Something happened at Spurs to make him do that. No. Nothing. You know, like, Harry Kane, fair enough, he wants to get out. It didn't have to be that Spurs were doing that to get him out. He clearly is on the hunt for medals. As Conan said, it's an American thing. You go ring chasing. I think that's what he's doing. He'll get more money, he'll double his wages, maybe more. But let's not make out that Harry Kane is an innocent victim.
But you see, Keith, this is a tactic that's being used, because Harry Kane in that interview with Gary Neville was saying, I want to play in the top competitions, I want to score goals in the top competitions, I want medals from the top competitions, right? He only basically, I think he held up short of saying, I want to leave Tottenham Hotspur. He still hasn't said he wants to leave Tottenham Hotspur. So people can then build a narrative to say, like Neville has here, I've worked with Harry and can't think of a more professional footballer than I've ever seen. He does everything right, so he must be seriously annoyed. Something has happened badly that made him do that. No, stop building that narrative. Why can't we build a narrative that Harry Kane wants out of Tottenham Hotspur without telling the Tottenham fans he wants out of Tottenham Hotspur? That's what it is. Because, you know, people go on and say loyalty and stuff like that. We had it during the week with Peter Smith going on about loyalty and Harry Kane and stuff like that. But part of them do want a legacy and to uphold that legacy like Harry Kane has at Spurs. So he, without saying I want to leave, right, and not turning up the training, okay, he can now spin a narrative through the media or friends or whoever it might be that, look, they've done something wrong and he's not going to say what it is, and Spurs aren't because they've done something wrong. That's the narrative that's being built.
Yeah.
And it may be true, but on the other side of it, you know, why doesn't Harry Kane just hand in a transfer request to Tottenham Hotspur? Hand in a transfer request and say, I want to leave this club and go and join Manchester City. And the reason he won't, right, or he hasn't done up until now, is because straight away, any little narrative or any little doubt in the back of any Spurs supporters' minds that maybe he is being treated badly completely gets thrown out the window. And the only story that comes out of it is Harry Kane, the messiah of Tottenham Hotspur, has asked to leave the club and go to Manchester City. And that's why it hasn't been said.
But and then he gives up a loyalty bonus as well if he puts in a transfer request.
Well, that'll be covered.
And that'll be the sickening thing. Yeah, but the sickening that a player actively does put in a transfer request without putting in a transfer request. But still,
it annoys me though, because you mentioned Neville there, right? The protection that Harry Kane gets from the media and some in the media. If we change the name of the player to Mo Salah, and Mo Salah didn't turn up for training, Mo Salah dives. When Harry Kane dives, it's smart play, it's streetwise. When Mo Salah dives, it's let's get him out of the country or send him to jail. You know, the protection that Harry Kane gets, I don't understand why. It makes no sense to me. And when you look at him, Gav, you've got a stat actually in terms of his injury record. Conan, when you look at Harry Kane and I suppose value for money, you know, is there kind of question marks, I suppose, over whether it's his age. There's certainly no question marks over his ability. Look, Harry Kane scores goals. He's an elite centre forward who is a master of his craft. He's had consistent niggles at this stage. Manchester City are obviously bringing in a ready-made player that's going to come in and hopefully hit the ground running for them. For the money that's rumoured to be paid, is there any question marks over the transfer, or do you just think this is a surefire thing?
Yeah, like I would love to say that there are question marks over it, but I don't think there are. Like, yeah, he's a brilliant player, and he's going to have a lot of success at City, which is a tough pill for all of us to swallow. Like, he's going to do really well. The injuries are a concern, but I'd say they're more of a concern at Spurs, where his absence is way more glaring. Like, Harry Kane will miss a few weeks at City, and nobody will bat an eyelid. You know, like, they'll just play Phil Foden up front again, or Kevin De Bruyne, and they'll be rotated a bit more. Like, I know they want to play as much as possible, but, you know, they'll mind him a bit more because they can. They don't need him playing every game, and they don't also need him running out to centre midfield where Grealish and De Bruyne will be. Like, he'll be up holding the line, getting easy goals, getting all those tap-ins and the pullbacks that they'll be providing for him. Like you said about changing his name to Mo Salah there, change it to Philip Coutinho. Like, you know, is this not exactly what happened with Coutinho leaving Liverpool, where there was a bit that did he not show up to training, or there was a bit of a bad. Oh,
don't remind me, Conan. He was my son's favourite. You're going to hear this story again. He's my son's favourite player, and Liverpool were playing in Dublin in a pre-season friendly, I think, against Bilbao. Keith, you've got better knowledge than me. I think it was. And Coutinho pulled the plug. I think it was the day before that game, and me young lad was devastated. So fuck Phil Coutinho. I'll never forgive him.
But, like, the narrative is from everybody, like, you know, outside of you as well, Jamie. But, like, you know, fuck Phil Coutinho. But in the general circles, it's never going to be fuck Harry Kane. And as far as Gary Neville's concerned, like, you know, any English player manager or United player manager are going to be back to the hilt without question. Like, that's his disposition, and he'll keep doing it.
Gav, one thing just to I want to finish on before we move on to the next topic. Manchester City playing on a bit of a cheat code here, in that because they've been able to effectively stockpile players, and I don't mean, because the thing that's always thrown at me, you know, when I make comments on social media is, well, we don't go and buy, you know, really expensive players. But that's not the question here. You've got three or four 30 to 50 million pound players in each position. And in effect, Manchester City can get rid of, and I use this quote unquote dead wood, which for anyone else would be a star player. They can shift a load of that and cover these two transfers quite comfortably. There's one tweet from Jay Motti that I've seen today, actually, that there seems to be a narrative now that, you know, no teams are going to be able to compete with Manchester City. And, you know, from a personal perspective, I think that's absolute nonsense. I think there's more than enough talent in the Premier League to give Manchester City a run for the money. No more so, I have to say it, from Liverpool. I think with our best 11, I think we can go toe-to-toe to them. But Jay Motti makes a great point. He said, United won three in a row, signed the best striker in the Premier League has ever seen. Well, that's debatable, in Ruud van Nistelrooy. And one of the world's best midfielders in Varane, and finish third the next season. Yes, City will be a force, but it's never over before it's begun. Mad to start throwing in a towel. The narrative seems to be that, you know, Manchester City are playing a cheat code and they can do whatever they want next season and no one can do anything about it. Do you share those sentiments, or do you think that teams can still stop them?
Oh, teams can still stop them. There's no doubt about it. You know, go back 2 years. Go back to possibly 3 years. You know, I think they win the league in 17-18, don't they? You know, the 100 points, and people thought, this is it now. This is it for forever. Man City are spending and I don't like the word stockpiling, but they're putting together a squad that are untouchable. And you look at 18-19, they win the league, they beat us by a point, and the best Premier League running you've ever seen, in my opinion. I think the highest quality from two teams you've ever seen in the Premier League. And people went, Liverpool got close. It'll never happen now. That's the last chance for everyone. And Liverpool just went and blew them away. You know, now, last season, I don't know what last season would have went for City if Liverpool had continued on in the form they were in from, you know, up until possibly about the 27th of December. I think they play West Brom at home and everything falls apart in there. But I think City got a sniff, and they went for it. And they knew nobody else could touch them bar Liverpool. And when they seen Liverpool falter, they absolutely went for it. And they won the league, and fair play to them. They were the best team in the league last season, all things considered. And when you see what they're doing, they are bringing, it looks like they're bringing Grealish, they may bring in Kane, but yeah, I agree with Jay Motti, nothing's over before it's begun. I really do. Are they playing on a cheat code? Yes, they are. And look, there's nothing you can do about it. That's what it is. You know, we've had a UEFA investigation. We've had CAS brought in. It looks like they got off on a technicality. We hear mumblings of the Premier League are investigating them. Well, how long does it fucking take? You know, these investigations are meant to be going back to the time when UEFA were investigating them, which is probably 4 or 5 years ago now at this stage. And the Premier League are still, you know, I don't know if they're putting it out in the social media world or the media world or whatever it might be, there's investigations going on. How long does it take? But at the end of the day, look, I'm a Liverpool fan. I support Liverpool. I watch Liverpool. I think Liverpool can win the league. Yes, absolutely. Does it make it harder when City deal what they're doing? Yeah, it does. But at the end of the day, you can't go into a season going, ah, City have it won because they've signed possibly one or two players. You just have to get on with it, you know, and if they're doing anything wrong, I don't know if they are. If they are doing anything wrong, something will come of it at some stage. But look, they're just playing on a different level financially, and you just have to come to terms with that. You know, for me, you know, without sounding flippant or hurt by what City done, City, Man City were a mid-table at best Premier League team, and they just literally got a country behind them and went and done what they're doing. And is it right? You can argue it all day if it's right or wrong. You know, would you take it? I would suggest 90% of football fans probably would. But at the end of the day, it's Man City that have done it. That's where, here is where we are. And you just have to get on with it. You know, you deal, because you're either get on with it or you don't. You know, that sort of way. There's no in between here. There's no kind of, can we hang on and have a look at everything that's going on here and then start the season? No, the season starts in 10 days time or whatever it is. So let's get on with it and let's see how it goes. But I still think Liverpool, I think possibly Chelsea could push them.
Yeah. Two things to call out before we move on to our beloved VAR. I have to say, Jay Motti's idea that Ruud van Nistelrooy is the best striker the Premier League has ever seen is wild. So we just
think he's up there.
Yeah, sort of.
I think he probably is the best.
Yeah,
I think he's the best. Van Nistelrooy. Yeah. I think we picked him as the best in the Premier League in a show before. I think he was amazing.
So, just to clarify, Thierry Henry, you still class Thierry Henry as a striker, yeah? You'd have Ruud ahead of Thierry Henry.
That was the best in the Premier League, yeah. Killer, absolute killer.
Yeah, an absolute killer, yeah. As a Liverpool fan, it might be hard to say, but
if you need to sign a striker tomorrow and money was no object, you'd be signing Ruud over Henry?
Yeah, 100%, every day of the week.
That has blown my mind. Conan, please tell me I'm not on my own here.
Ruud's class, but like I would have Suarez ahead of Ruud. Like, do you know, I think there's a lot of people in
would have Suarez ahead of
Henry. I think it depends what sort of striker you're looking for. Yeah. You know, if you're looking for someone that has the pace and he's brilliant, Henry brilliant. If you want someone that's just in the box scoring goals, I don't think there's been a better one in the Premier League than Ruud van Nistelrooy. I think
Shearer and Henry are the two.
Shearer was brilliant, but I just, for me, Van Nistelrooy was just so fucking clinical. It was untrue.
He was, yeah.
He was so clinical.
Dead
for like, it's a bit like the Haaland and Mbappe argument for me. You know, like if you were to ask me which one I want to Liverpool tomorrow, it's definitely Erling Haaland. Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. Because I think if to suit Liverpool, the way we play now, I go back to what we're talking about earlier, Liverpool have evolved into a team that tries to dominate and create more chances rather than just spring you and destroy you with pace. Right now I take Erling Haaland over Kylian Mbappe all day long, because he's an absolute killer and he has it all in the box, and I think that's probably one thing we're short of. So that's probably where the real Van Nistelrooy Henry argument could go. But
I can't even believe it's an argument, lads. That's blown my mind. I think
I think when you look at it as, you know, like if you were a manager, Jamie, and you knew you had a killer striker, right? Yeah. Wasn't massively mobile, but he was a killer striker. You would go and look for a Thierry Henry because he's rapid and he can play off left, right. He can play through the middle. He's 6'2" or whatever it is. But if you had a Thierry Henry in your side and you wanted to partner him with someone, you would go for a Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Yeah, but now we're changing the rules. Now we're changing the rules. I just said you got to pick one. You got to pick one player. It doesn't matter about your team. If you have to pick one,
it always depends. It always depends on the team you're playing. or the team you're looking to put together. You know what I mean?
If your team is shit, you go with Suarez as a one-man band. But if you've got a good team, Ruud van Nistelrooy putting the ball into the lane.
I'd always pick Henry. Honestly, I'd put Henry in the Dog and Duck FC. Like, it just wouldn't bother me. Just give him the ball and let him do his thing.
That's because
like,
he was just classy. Like, he was silky.
I think if your team lacked a bit of creation, I think Henry is your man, right? But if your team was lacking, was making loads of chances and not finishing enough, I think you pick Van Nistelrooy.
I think he still pick Henry because he'll still give you the finishing and everything else on top of it.
I don't know. Yeah. It's just the type of player Van Nistelrooy was. He was just, it fell in the box and he scored. He was just so good. I think he was so good. But it's a good argument.
One final thing on Ruud van Nistelrooy. For a footballer who has that much money should never have a haircut of that nature. Like, you just go to barbers and sort your barnet out. It's absolutely unacceptable to be able to have a poor haircut.
Dor Kel had a poxy haircut as well.
Yeah, he did. I actually met there quite on a random a night out about 3:30 in Liverpool in a bar called G Bar, and I had to triple take. I was like, "Is that there? Is Coit at the bar?" And I tried to hug him, and it was all sweaty, and it just the meeting did not go as I had planned in my head. But it was a nice fella. Anyway, tangents aside, VAR, right? And Gav, if you can pull up our mate Mike Riley, come out with some interesting quotes this week. In summary, it looks like we might potentially be getting our version of football back. And, you know, distilling all the comments down, it looks like they're going to be more lenient in terms of the offsides that they give and certainly look to give the advantage back to strikers. Mike Riley has come out and said, fundamentally, we want the approach to be one that best allows the players to go out and express themselves, allows the Premier League games to flow, and means the refereeing team, both referee and VAR, don't intervene for the trivial offences. They want to create a free-flowing game where the threshold is slightly higher than it was last season. That's good news, lad, surely, because, I mean, we have moaned a lot, and I have moaned in particular around a couple of decisions that I'm not going to go back over, but it seems like with the new rules that are going to come into play, the leniency, it looks like they may be a thing of the past, Con, and that must be good news for all football fans.
Mostly because we won't be hearing you whinging about it for a full season.
That's totally fair.
that's close it down,
you know,
now.
I don't know if anybody's I'm not a rugby fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I watched the Lions game there against South Africa, the second test, and quick story behind it was that after the first test, the Lions director of rugby, Razia Erasmus, released a 62-minute video breaking down every single mistake the referee made and missed throughout the game. 62 minutes, the director of rugby for that country. And then what happened in the next game, the fallout of that, was sad that it did have an effect, but it had a massive effect that every single decision was referred to the TMO. And I thought, this is interesting because we always in football look to rugby and be like, they do it right, why can't we do it right? And now you suddenly have this debate in rugby saying we can't have this as our future. Like, they've fallen into the football mold now where everything was being referred and they were breaking it down because the referee was afraid to be wrong because he was afraid of another 62-minute video. And the idea in rugby is that, like, you have to let the referee make the decision sometimes as well. He's going to be wrong. You hope that it'll balance out. But he's a referee for a reason. He's there to referee a game. Like, he's being paid a lot of money. And VAR's there, hopefully, when somebody balls us up or we need a... Like the reason goal line technology is so effective is because it's just so clear-cut. It's either over or it's not. And now, like, the like of these rules breaking down, like, you know, I know, Jamie, it's your biggest pet peeve, is breaking down to the minute of inches, like, you know, if somebody's offside or not, or if their toe's offside or not. Like, if the more of that stuff that we can let go, the better, and you're not falling into that trap that ironically rugby is now falling into and trying to overanalyze every little thing.
Gav, thicker lines. You'd be happy.
Don't start
with
me. Sorry, I'm going to put something up on the screen. I'm just going to go back to what you read out, right? Fundamentally, we want the approach to be one that best allows the player to go out and express themselves, allows the Premier League games to flow. Fuck off. And means the referee and team, both as referee and as VAR, don't intervene for trivial offences. Right? Let's create a free-flowing game where the threshold is slightly higher than it was last season. That tells me nothing about how the referees are going to make decisions or approach them. Nothing. because
that tells me that they know they fucked up last season.
Correct. And there's a comment on the screen. There was a comment on the screen there from Red Steve a minute ago saying exactly the same thing. You know, it's there. He says, good on them for admitting they had no idea what they were doing for the past 2 years. Bell ends, right? Jamie, they can write all this stuff, and we get onto penalties and offsides in a minute, right? But they can write all as much as they want until you see it happen. Take that as, you know, I wouldn't even read it. I wouldn't even let it come into my brain and, you know, and go into a season thinking that this is what's going to happen. Because all last year, right, it was trivial offences. The game wasn't flowing. And we knew when he made the decision and he was called to a screen, he was being told what decision was going to be made. We knew what was going. You could see it. You know, it didn't take Einstein to work it out. Jamie, they're talking about thicker lines, as you said. All right, you're gonna see stuff about penalties, and you're gonna see stuff about offsides in a minute. But regardless of how you put this forward, the same people that were doing this last season under a set of rules will be in charge next season. Okay, and I've never seen so many rule changes, alterations, and everything else going throughout a season as I did last season. What's to tell you that it's going to be any different now? What's to tell you that the ticker lines could lead to the exact same decisions, the exact same ineptitude, and then we're just going to change something in October, and we're going to change something in March? And remember, so a decision that you would get in October, you may not get in March, which affects your league position, affects you financially, affects everything. They're full of shit, Jamie. It's the only way I can put it. It's the only way I can put it. Because, and me and Andy have had endless arguments over VAR, and I know you're so annoyed over it. But at the end of the day, regardless of what you write down on the piece of paper or objectives or you know, you put out in the media, the same people that were just nearly abandoning what was meant to happen last season, right, are going to be in charge this season. Matt was talking to us the other day, and he said to us, they should start fast tracking people in the refereeing, and that will get more people interested, and more people that understand the game can keep up with the game and aren't so set in their ways into the game at the highest level, and then you can implement it. The difference in the Euros and European football to the Premier League is unreal. It's unreal when you watch it. The same people, Jamie, will be in charge, and I will not believe a word out of Mike Riley's mouth or anybody to do with VAR, the Premier League, or the PGMOL until you actually see it in action. And I would, if I was a betting man, I would say that we're in 3 to 4 games in the Premier League next season. We will be right back where we started at the beginning of last season.
Laura Duffy made a good comment in the chat. She said that this is just Mike Riley's way of saying clear and obvious in a different way. And I think that kind of rings true a little bit. Keith, I'll come to you. One of the things that we debated a lot was obviously the offsides and the idea that someone's toenail could mean they're offside, which kills me. It kills me, always has. If they are going to give benefit, whether it's through thicker lines, whatever route they choose, I'm all for that benefit. We want to see goals as fans. We want to see goals. I think the big thing for me is, you know, if we're able to remove those marginal offsides, you know, I think they gave some examples of the ones that would have been allowed. I think the one, you know, the much spoken about one, the Sadio Mane goal, the Jordan Henderson goal, would have been allowed. You know, these are the type of goals we want to see. So that has to be a positive step. But the other one for me as well is the contact in the box. Because we've spoke at length about some of the decisions that were and weren't given. It's a bit of common sense, and it seems like now they're trying to look at intent and not just that any contact in the box is a penalty, because that was one thing, you know, as a former player myself, just because there's contact doesn't mean it's a penalty, especially now when players are looking for contact and then going down. It certainly looks now like they're going to be analysing the contact and seeing, does that contact you know, result in the actual, you know, the falling over, the likes of a Danny Welbeck. It says in the quote, the principles we established are the referee should look for contact and establish clear contact. Then ask if that contact has a consequence, and then has the player used that contact to try and win a foul or a penalty. So I think these do sound like positive changes. Are you like Gav? You don't believe them?
I'm skeptical because it's the same people. Do you know what I mean? It's the same people in charges. Now, I know there's 4 new referees getting sort of brought into the Premier League, but, you know, I don't think they're going to revolutionise it. I don't think they're going to bleed and shake up the apple cart or not. I think they're just going to be four new lads getting told what to do by the old lads. Whoever came up with the idea that taking away the benefit of the for the attacking team on offsides, whoever decided that that wasn't a good thing, am I going to now spend 10 minutes, 15 minutes every game getting lines out to judge something that's onside, offside by a gee hair or whatever? Whoever decided that was a thing is an absolute cabbage. And the same with the contact in the box, because like in cricket, you know, in cricket, and we're a big cricket channel here, we're big into it, the cricket scene. But you know, in cricket, right, when they do it and they get a little nick off the bat and they go to the bleeding, they show a little graphic where a tiny nick, and it's sort of like a heat sensor that comes up. Mm. Penalties have become like that with contact. So the players know, right, there's any contact, I'm going to get a penalty now. So they're going down, and VAR are just checking, is there a nick? You know, if they could get the heat sensor thing on there and see it slightest touch, it justifies a penalty when the contact isn't a foul. Do you know what I mean? Like the notion that there has to be a foul seems to be gone now. It just seems to be, is there a touch by a player on another player in the box now that we can give this penalty? It's slowed down everything. It's gone to ridiculous lengths in England, how they've taken this fucking time to make these decisions to come to them. But if it takes you 5 minutes to decide an offside or a foul or a touch, it's too long and it shouldn't be taken that. So I'm sceptical that it'll even change.
Yeah, the two key words there, or the two key sentences to finish on before we move on to the next topic is, Riley said, it's not sufficient to say, yes, there's contact. Contact on its own is only part of what the referee should look for. Consider consequence and the motivation of the player as well. So it seems like, fingers crossed, we're going back to a little bit of common sense. Now, I want to come...
You will get a bit of common sense, and, you know, that quote is probably fair enough. You know, the referee is going through, but again, it's whatever referee, it's what he thinks on the day, it's what mood he's in when he looks at it. You know, the sort of way it's still going to this. There's still a lot of grey area in that for me. There's still a lot, you know, it's not sufficient to say yes, there was contact. Now we're going to say, yeah, we're leaving it to common sense in a certain way, but at the same time, you know, I still think you're going to lack a bit of consistency. The offside one, lads, I thought that was a piss take when I read it. You know, on marginal offside, we've now effectively...
Thick lines on the Etch-a-Sketch. What were they? Etch-a-sketches back in the day.
But look at the words. Like, we've now effectively reintroduced the benefit of the doubt to the attacking player. When we have a really close offside decision, we carry on following the exact same process that we did last season with the one pixel lines. And then we'll put it on ticker broadcast lines. And where they overlap, those situations will now be deemed as onside. So I presume if one line touches the other, it's onside. You're giving the benefit.
Yeah.
When what we're giving back to the game is 20 goals that would have been disallowed last season. So if it's toenails, the noses of the players who are offside, they might have been offside last season, but next season they won't. When are they going to tell us about measuring from armpits and if you point to where you want the ball? When are they going to tell us about that? Like the
slaves,
you know, and players getting pushed into offside positions. Like Ollie,
it's actually getting me angry. It's actually getting me angry again.
This is what I'm saying. It's a lot of words on a page, but it's not really telling you. You know, we make the lines thicker, and if his nose is offside, well, you know, we won't do that because if the lines overlap. But Patrick Bamford is pointing where he wants a ball last season, and he's given offside for it.
Not to make you angrier, Jamie, but like I still think, you know, the biggest problem is that you're always going back to just an all referee. Like, I think I was naive in thinking when video technology came in, there would be some sort of arbitrator of sport over the top of it, or a group of lawyers, like, you know, taking the rule books and then looking at it and then deciding sort of objectively what everything's going to be and how it should be applied. But it's just another referee who's incompetent and he's looking out for his mate. And like Keith Wright, like, you're still going to be those nicks and people going down and falling for them. But then Gareth Wright, there's going to be inconsistencies and we'll still be left complaining. So the fact that I've realised that now, that it's just another referee up in the studio or wherever he is in London, maybe like the less that they're used, the better.
I just think they'll hide their decisions more. I just don't think they'll get us involved. Like in the Euros, things will just be decided in the background. But yeah. I think you were actually on the podcast with me, Conan, where I went into full meltdown mode where I was done with football. I think, am I falling out of love with football was the title of the podcast and all sorts. I'm now at the stage where I want to do podcasts about falling back in love with football. So please don't remind me of the shite that we've just had to live through from the past season. Moving on to the next topic, because mindful of time, right? So what we decided to do for the next topic, we all nominated a player that is our player to watch for the new season. So we're going to go around the room and everyone's going to give us their one to watch. And I'm going to start with the football encyclopedia himself, Mr. Keith Plunkett. And your player to watch this season, you want to take the floor, Keith?
Yeah, Jamie, yeah, Patson Daka is the player I'm going for. Patson Daka was a player I thought Liverpool would have likened to see come into Liverpool for the reasons that it may be slightly different to where he has gone. I think if he'd come into Liverpool, he would have gradually taken on the number nine shirt. I think he would have been a player that maybe not have gone as a starter for Liverpool, but would have been more than adequate backup, and in time would have taken on the mantle from Firmino. I think going to Leicester is a very interesting move for him, because Jamie Vardy can't go on forever. Jamie Vardy is excellent. Jamie Vardy, Jesus Christ, you think he can't go on forever and you might get another 3 years out of him playing the way he is. But I think in all seriousness, Jamie Vardy looked to be slowing down a bit. I know he's still getting his goals, but they're managing him a lot more now.
More economical with his movements as well. I think he's not just a you know a rat up a drain pipe constantly. He's just got to be a bit smarter.
Exactly, and I think that you could see that clearly sort of with Leicester last season. And I just think Patson Daka is an ideal replacement, because he is. We've done the comparison before on the show. I think he's very like Samuel Eto'o. I think he's very like Samuel Eto'o in his play. I think when he gets in around the box, I think he's lethal in there. People would say, look, he only done it in the Austrian league, which is fair enough, but Erling Haaland done it in the Austrian league and then he made the step up. I know Minamino hasn't exactly pulled up any trees since we got him. But this guy went in and he took over from Haaland essentially when he left, and he's got a good goal return for them. You look at the stat there on the thing, you can see 18, 19, he only gets 3 goals in 15 games, but they wouldn't have been starts. He would have been, I think Haaland is obviously still there at that stage. Then you can see the next season, he's hitting 24 and 31, and then last season, 27 and 28. His assists aren't great, but he's not that type of player, do you know what I mean? And I think he might have actually got an assist or two for Leicester already in the preseason games. I just think the type of player he is, he will take chances. We spoke about Ruben Nistelrooy being a serial killer in the box. I don't think he's at that level, by the way, but I think he's of that ilk of player. You're not going to see maybe too much from him in the build-up, but I think in and around that last third, I think he's going to be good. And I think he's a good foil with Iheanacho. If Iheanacho, because he came on last season, in fairness, I thought he'd fallen off a cliff, and he sort of came back and forced his way in. And I could see him doing well with Vardy, but it'll be interesting to see if he starts the season or if he's brought in gradually by Rodgers. But he's one I'll be watching with interest, you know, just to see how he develops. But certainly one that interests me.
Well, so, Conan, what about yourself, mate? Who's your player to watch for the season?
Well, given what's happened this evening, I probably should have gone for Danny Ings. I think I missed a boat with that one. That would have been a good one after Villa signed him out of nowhere. And I know
he must be happy with the signing, though.
Well, it is a good sign. Like, actually, he would be one to watch, because I imagine like the conversations that Dean Smith has had with him are similar to what he would have had with Ollie Watkins. Like, Ollie Watkins had a choice between Spurs and Villa, but Villa won over because, you know, Dean Smith was saying, come to Villa, I'll help get you in the England squad. Like, that's his ambition. And Danny Ings obviously wants to get back there as well. There's obviously a conflict of interest now, the two of them there, but like I say, they can probably play together. They can both play across the front three. There's options. Villa needed depth. Not going to turn us into a Villa podcast, even though I've actually got another Villa player as a player to watch. But just on Danny Ings as well, like, Jamie, I know if you had a choice between Danny Ings and Thierry Henry, you would always go with Danny Ings as well.
100%. Great minds think alike.
Conor, is there any possibility of Villa changing their formation with the players that they've brought in? you always would have played a 4-3-3, wasn't it? With Watkins through the middle and Traore or Trezeguet maybe on one side and Grealish on the other. But when you bring in the players that they've brought in, is there going to be a change of shape there? Like, as you touched on, Watkins and Ings walking together. But Leon Bailey has to fit in there now as well. And Buendia coming in for big money. Like, is there talk of a formation change, or will it just be a case of Ings will play some, Watkins will play some, and the two boys will go with?
Yeah, like, there's four boys there, and I don't want to write off Bertrand Traore altogether, but like, I sort of am. There's four lads there, and that there's Buendia, there's Bailey, there's Watkins, and there's Ings. And I think between the four of them, three of them will play, but they'll all get 30 games a season. Like, Villa were really missing depth. Like, Villa have been operating with nine players last season. Like, you know, it's not enough. As soon as Grealish went down, we were bollocks. Like, and like you mentioned, it was 4-3-3. They tried to change to 4-2-3-1 to get Barkley involved. Worst idea of all time. if your tactic is to get Barkley involved, it's the wrong tactic. but what that also did was it exposed midfielders. Like, so you had Douglas Luiz, who was class the year before. You had him and John McGinn now sitting in a two, and none of them the Fabinho type or the Ndidi type, or, you know, just somebody to control a game, get on the ball when everyone's freaking out, to enforce, like, you know, to mince somebody when he's trying to come through. And those two were just really exposed last year, had bad seasons, and that was Villa's biggest weak point. And it was because of that formation, which they probably needed from an attacking point of view. So we're still really missing a midfielder is the overriding point with Villa, but it gives them more options as well. Like, you know, Villa went behind a lot last season, and there was a stat that was going right up until, I think, past the midway point, where every time they went behind, they didn't get a point. Like, they folded, they just lost the game. And a lot of that's down to their inflexibility and their lack of options. So, you know, rather than bringing on, and, you know, don't want to demean him, but rather than bringing on Keenan Davis, you can now have Watkins and Ings up top, which is way more lethal, like, you know. But like, the player I have as my one to watch is Ezra Konsa. Obviously, he was brilliant last year, and he can go through, like, his clearances and his blocks. I was actually surprised, Jamie, you put in the comparison with Tyrone Mings, and Mings is way ahead, like, aerial wise, and Mings is a dominant force in the air. What these stats don't have, though, is brain farts, and Mings would be way ahead of Ezra Konsa in that as well. Like, you know, Tyrone Mings is a great player if his mistake a game doesn't lead to a goal. You know,
and like he's got a bit of the Dejan Lovren's about him, has he?
He does. Like, when he's on it, he's on it. Like, he is. He's a great player. But last year, Ezra Konsa was a better player, and I was genuinely surprised. Not surprised, but, you know, I think every Villa fan would tell you that he was better than Mings, and the fact that Mings was going to the Euros and then playing in the Euros was strange, because Konsa was way better, and he can play right back. Like, you know, what more does Southgate want? But he yeah, like, I right think back. He's going to be one to watch, and mostly as well. Like, and this is why the Grealish thing I think is so painful. Obviously, he's a legend, but when Grealish went, it has now sort of, I think Villa were trying to step beyond being a selling club or a feeder club, just trying to get out of that Everton mold. Like, Villa and Everton were always sort of on that level where players played well, but they could be picked off by the bigger clubs. If Grealish had a stage, he might have pushed on past that. But the fact that Grealish didn't stay and he was able to be picked off is now making people panic about the like of Watkins, who every time I'm on this bloody stream, I see Liverpool fans talking about Watkins, and I hope they forget about him and just ignore us. He's not that good. The like of Watkins, the like of Konsa, like, these good players that are coming through with Villa, Martinez, you wonder if they get so good, you know, are they going to be picked off as well? Now, obviously, ideally, you want your signings to be good, you want the young lads to be good, and coinciding with these quality players, then you can actually just step on to another level. But there is just that fear somebody like Konsa as well could just push on to that other level and might attract a lot of interest, but I hope he doesn't.
It's funny, I was doing my fantasy football team with my son before, and I was surprised, Conan, there's a hell of a lot of value in that Aston Villa team. I actually found myself at one point, I think I had too many Villa players. I was like, hold on, what's going on here? But bear in mind, one of them was Grealish, which I think since we've been doing this podcast, he's now confirmed as a Manchester City player. So I might be able to tweak that slightly. But yeah, Gav, I'm going to come to you for your player. Tell us a little bit about the player that you picked.
The player I've picked is a player that I seen live at Anfield at the start of the 2019-20 season. Norwich player, Todd Cantwell. Norwich weren't bad in that first half, and I think they ended up going in 4-0 down. But Cantwell just had something about him, you know.
The swagger.
Yeah, lovely touch. He reminded me a little bit of Grealish, I'm going to be honest with you. The way he takes control of the ball, the way he kind of tries to like drift past people, he had an eye for a pass. And I really like the look of him. I think he suffered at Norwich because I'm not a fan of their manager. I think
Daniel Farke?
Yeah, I think he plays extremely naive football, or he did do two seasons ago. And while people were telling you Norwich were great to watch, they were getting beaten every week. I hope that changes for them come this season. Obviously not on the 14th of August. But with Todd Cantwell, you know, I just like the look of him. He's had a season in the Championship after being in the Premier League. And I was surprised he wasn't picked up by somebody. But yeah, I think he's a really, really good player. I think he's really good work rate. I think, you know, he holds onto the ball well. He sees a pass. He doesn't look the strongest of guys. He kind of has that build where you think, is he a bit lightweight? But he's not. And I think, you know, if Norwich come up and can keep, they'll continue to play that brand. But I think if they're not as naive with and without the ball as they were the last time, and they can give a little bit more protection and be in games more, I think Cantwell could be somebody that could do really well for them. You know, he's another year older now coming into the Premier League. He has the experience there of playing at the top level, and he knows what it's about. He's not coming in cold this time. I think he's somebody that could really, really push on. And I'm surprised Norwich are coming back into the Premier League with Todd Cantwell in their squad. I thought he would have been snapped up last summer or January last year. So he's one to watch. And it's just going on from what I've seen at Norwich and when I've seen him play. And of course, I've seen him live play, and I just really, really like the look of him.
It's funny you draw the comparisons with Grealish, because some of the noises today is that's who Villa are potentially looking to bring in to replace Grealish. And that there's some genuine interest there. There's people in the chat saying that he's a better player than Maddison. I'd be surprised. I mean, when you look at the value, I think the rumours are, and I was told a little bit of info a couple of days ago that the price to get the Maddison deal done would be over 70 million and Arsenal are confident of getting that done. You know, you look at the output of a Todd Cantwell and probably the money that it will cost to get him on board, you know, there's certainly a lot more value potentially to be had in the likes of a Todd Cantwell.
70 million for James Maddison is ludicrous.
It's crazy. Over 70 million. Yeah, it'll probably take over 70 million to get it done. The English tax is one thing. So two things that are annoying me a little bit at the moment. English tax on players makes no sense. Why do you have to play more? Because they're English, and then the phrase top six, as I mentioned earlier, there's teams that are in that top. Who is the top six now, by the way? Who is actually?
God only knows.
It's still Spurs and Arsenal, it's
West Ham and Leicester. Yeah,
absolute nonsense.
Spurs and Arsenal.
Absolute nonsense. Okay, so to finish off, my player to watch, and I'm terrible. I didn't look anywhere other than Liverpool because I find it very difficult to do that. And I'm going to pick a player that I've seen some strange noises on social media of late, and that's Curtis Jones. And the reason I wanted to pick Curtis Jones, I think he was a victim of circumstance last season, in that very much like Thiago, he was playing in a midfield without shape. He was playing in a team without its spine. And anybody that has watched Liverpool over their sustained period of success, or certainly, you know, competing for major trophies, is without that spine, it's very, very difficult to play in that Liverpool team. What the demands are for the three centre midfielders are huge. You have to cover so much space, both offensively and defensively. But when you actually look at the numbers of Curtis Jones, and there's a couple of graphics that I'm going to pull up. He's 20 years old, first and foremost. He's been delivering these stats in a struggling side. And if you can go to the other one first of all, Gav, I think there's a slightly longer stat, which basically ranks him in terms of percentile for other players in his position. So if you can see the numbers in red, you can see where he ranks in terms of that percentile. So you can see, for example, pass completion, 95th percentile. Progressive carries is the big one, as you've seen on the previous slide, 96th percentile. And progressive passes, recovery, so he's again 94th percentile. If you dive a little bit more into the attacking runs, because this is something I think that he offers that a lot of Liverpool players don't. We often talk about Liverpool playing against deep lying teams and we struggle to break them down. What Curtis Jones can do is he can beat a man, he can break a line. And if you pull up the next stat, Gav, what it actually shows, it looks a little bit more of his ability to drive at teams. So it looks at carries, 95th percentile, total carrying distance. So the length of the field that he's taking the ball, he's running at players, progressive carries into the final third, he's 97th percentile, carries into the penalty area. So you can see the consistent theme here that Curtis Jones is a 20-year-old playing in a struggling team who isn't hiding. He's getting on the ball, he's driving at teams, and he's trying to make things happen. Can you imagine what this 20-year-old is going to be able to do when the spine of the team is back, when Jordan Henderson is back in the team, when the lighthouse Fabinho is back in the team? They give Liverpool its structure for the likes of a Curtis Jones to go on and create. So I'm really excited to see what he's going to be able to do in a proper Liverpool team, because I don't think what we saw last season was in any way, shape or form the Liverpool that we've come accustomed to. So when you get the big names back, we get the defence a little bit higher up the pitch and we're not as worried about that ball over the top. It allows us to press a little bit higher and he can go and create, which I think Curtis Jones is going to be a big player for us next season. So definitely excited to see how he does. And it's been strange, Gav, you know, when you look at some of the noises that's come out on social media, it seems like there's a little bit of shade getting thrown his way now, which for me just makes absolutely no sense.
No, it doesn't. You know.
Oh, great to see Curtis Jones in the chat there, by the way, Gav. Didn't see that.
and he says, I didn't realise my numbers were that good. So there you go. welcome, Curtis. it doesn't make any sense, Jamie, because when I see people giving out about Curtis Jones, I put it down to a nervousness over the transfer window. Genuinely. Yeah. I think when you look at it, you'll have people going, right, we want a midfielder in. Who we have a go at, you know, and it's usually Oxen, it's usually Naby Keita, and now it's Curtis Jones is turning. And look, Curtis Jones, for me last season, done very, very well as a 19, 20-year-old. As you said, in the midfield, that was faltering from December onwards, and then patched up because our midfielders were 25 yards down the pitch playing around the centre-backs. So I think it'll stand to him. I think what happened last season will definitely stand him in his progression. But look, Curtis Jones done nothing wrong for Liverpool last season, in my opinion. Yes, he had a couple of bad games. He had a couple of really good games. And he had a couple of 6, 7 out of 10s. He's a 20-year-old footballer, you know, at one of the biggest clubs in the world. In a team that was literally 20-odd different centre-back partnerships. You know, you had a Manley that was off form. You had a Firmino that was off form. Salah was great. But there were so many things happening at Liverpool last season. I think it's hard, even with them numbers are very impressive, don't get me wrong, but I think it's hard to even judge Curtis Jones or make a call on him. Even off the back of them stats, I think it's hard to judge him because of the circumstance he was in. Now, having said that, in 2 years' time, a year's time, this season, wherever it might be, if the shit hits the fan, Curtis Jones, having gone through that experience, will be expected to step up. You only get so much leeway and then you're expected to do it. Now, Curtis Jones, I think probably last season was probably a year ahead of his progression for me. I would look for this season to be the one where he takes that step on and then you look for him to be really consistent from next season onwards. But to turn around and say you don't want Curtis Jones or you know, he put up a social media post today, yesterday, where he mishits a volley. He mishits a volley into the ground, it goes in the top corner, and jokingly he says, what are we going to call this? And people lash them, you know, out of the club, you mishit it, you're this, you're that, calling them names. And I'm like, lads, this is a 20-year-old lad putting up a bit of social media for a bit of laugh, and this is the response you're getting, you know. And look, he's part of the squad. There's no doubt about that. If a midfielder comes in, which I think they will, it's not going to affect Curtis Jones' situation at Liverpool or his position at Liverpool. So, you know, I've seen stuff like Villa want him and Villa have made inquiries. I'd be amazed if Liverpool turned around and done anything with Curtis Jones because, you know, I go back to Ox and I go back to Kate. They're not as reliable as Curtis Jones and they haven't put in the numbers of Curtis Jones. And James Milner is 36 odd years of age. Jordan Henderson has some issues with regards to injury. Thiago, I think he'd be fine. Fabinho would be absolutely fine. So for me, Curtis Jones, I'm looking forward to seeing him this season. And I don't think anyone should fear him being in the team or being in the squad because he hasn't let Liverpool down. Yeah, he's had some bad games, but everyone has. He hasn't let Liverpool down at all.
There's a couple of comments in the chat saying they were surprised that I didn't pick Thiago. I thought I'd just give the Thiago love in a rest. I think I've done it to death now. And then I did debate Naby Keita, but I'm not getting suckered in. I'm completely and utterly like I'm rooting for him. I am rooting for him, but it's the hope that kills you, and I'm not prepared to be hurt again. So I'm going with Curtis Jones, and I'm massively rooting for him now. Keith, I want to come to you on a topic that broke today, just to finish off on. Fantastic news. Alisson Becker has committed his long-term future to Liverpool off the back of Fabinho doing it the day before and Trent recently doing it as well. So in my opinion, you've got arguably the best goalkeeper, defensive midfielder and right back in world football, certainly right up there, committed to the club for the long term. Fantastic business for the club. People like to snipe about the fact that, you know, we're renewing contracts as opposed to buying new players. But, you know, the fact that you've got that commitment from such senior players, such talented players and players that have another level to go up, to go up, and they'll be doing it at our club is a massive boost.
Yeah, it is a massive boost, Jamie. And the thing about it is, it's 2 in 2 days, isn't it? Fabinho was on yesterday. It's Alisson done now. They're getting them done quickly. Do you know what I mean? They done Trent. Trent wasn't a priority. He wasn't part of this group that are out of contract. But it'll be interesting to see. I think we're going to see every couple of days one of these lads being announced until we're not seeing it. And I think that'll be telling about their plans for some of their players in the squad. I think, you know, the fact they got Alisson done so quickly, they got Fabinho done, they're only back from the Copa America, they're only back with the squad a couple of days. It shows, you know, it's agents that look after all these things. It'll be interesting. I think they'll do Van Dijk, I think they'll do Salah. I think they'll be the priority ones. Mane maybe are a push. I've my own suspicions about Jordan Henderson. Bobby, I don't think they'll be at the top of the pecking order when it comes to giving out these contracts. But it will be interesting to see what they do, because the Trent one really threw it for me. Because what does Robbo do? Robbo's one of the lowest earners in the squad. Do you know what I mean? Like on his base wage. It'd be interesting to see if they throw him one. Because all this talk was, you know, we have to secure these lads. We have to secure these lads. But we didn't have to secure Trent. That was a reward for performance and his output. So it'll be interesting I think they're going to get a few of these contracts done very, very quickly now. And maybe I'm an optimist, then they'll look at getting the incomings. I think we'll see one or two outgoings, whether they're permanent or on loan. And I think we'll get a couple of bodies through the door. But I thought I might have dragged out with these till the end of the window, the contracts. But the fact that they're coming now ticking fast makes me think this will be boxed off fairly sharpish, and then we'll get the business done.
There was a comment that came in there. It was brilliant. I think it was from James Milne in relation to the stats for Alisson, and it said, "Where was the goals for stat?" I love that. definitely something we didn't think that we'd have to say. But Gav, before I go to Conor to tell us a little bit about what's coming up on the Villa podcast for this year and where people can find it. I didn't read out that stat, did I? Here's one for some parties. Interesting stat for some parties that you're at. Alisson Becker is the only goalkeeper in Premier League history with a goal, an assist, a Golden Glove award and a winner's medal. So take that one away with you and put that in your football trivia quizzes. Gav, just want to finish off, you know, a lot of people will talk about the need for transfers, but Liverpool very much said from the outset, you know, this was going to be a time where they tie down their big players, and for so long Liverpool has been a stepping stone, not a destination for top players to spend their peak years. what this tells me at this moment in time. And whilst, you know, some fans are on tenterhooks waiting for new signings, I'm fully confident that we will bring in what we need. This is a massive statement of intent for Liverpool, because these top players, world-class players, are saying that they want to stay at Liverpool in their peak years.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you only have to go back probably just before Klopp arrived, and you have players constantly. You're worried. You're more worried going into summers about keeping players than actually bringing players in. And you nearly go into a summer where you think, well, will we keep him? If we don't keep him, who will we get? And famously, Suarez leaves, and we had a nightmare. Markovic and Balotelli and Ricky Lambert and all this sort of stuff. Whereas now, it's just par for the course, isn't it? That we renew contracts and we keep these players. No one seems to come looking, you know, because everyone's happy at Liverpool and wants to play for Jurgen Klopp. And I think that's where you get the opinion of some. And there's probably something to it that, you know, when Klopp leaves, will all these players or players in the future want to play for us? Because, you know, Klopp is a massive pull and, you know, stuff like that. So, but right now, you know, Fabinho was, me and Grizz spoke about it last night. It's brilliant to have him in. I think that's a sign of intent, to show that he's going to be your linchpin in the middle of midfield or the base of midfield for the next 4 or 5 years. Trent is just Trent. You know, people will argue, but he's a generational talent for me. He's the way he plays right back is just phenomenal. And, you know, Keith saying they're coming thick and fast. I think these contracts are agreed weeks. You know, it's not like they agreed it last night with Fabinho when they took a picture of him this morning. You know, these are agreed ages ago, and they're all just, you know, agreed 2-3 weeks ago and just get the paperwork done and yeah, we're good to go now. And I think I'm hoping the same with Van Dijk. I'm hoping the same with Mane. Some people mightn't. I'm actually hoping the same with Firmino, Henderson. I want them all signed because I think there's more to come. You know, some will say they're aging. Some will say that, you know, we should need to move on. But I think them players, I think they're good enough for another contract. And running alongside that, incomings, outgoings, that's all in the mix as well. There's no way Liverpool are standing around going, let's just wait and hope that someone bids for an Origi or a Shaqiri or a Nat Phillips or a Ben Davies or wherever it is. There's no way. You know, there's loads of balls being juggled, I suppose, and we'll see the outcome of it. And some might be happy come the 31st of August, and some mightn't be. You know, and I think the overriding thing about this is that I think 99% of Liverpool fans believe that two players need to come in. And if them two come in, who cares what goes out? You know, the sort of way, that's the way I feel about it. Who cares? You know, if Liverpool want to do that and they go about their business and get it done, fine, but you might see rocky ground come the 31st of August if two haven't come in and there's a couple that are still there that you would expect it to leave. But overall, on the contract stuff, Jamie, just keep them coming because they've done brilliant for Liverpool. And I think a lot of people are making way too much of last season, way too much of it. And, you know, I think Liverpool will prove something next season. I really do, with all them players on new deals. I genuinely believe that. And that might be me being a bit, you know, pie in the sky are way too optimistic. But when you see what happened to Liverpool last season and the 10, 12 games towards the end of the season where they showed a real bottle and a real fight and a real belief to go, look, let's put ourselves in a position and then we can go on and show what we're really made of, in particular Jota, Thiago and stuff like that. But more contract, good. Couple of incomings, good. Maybe some outgoings, let's see. But overall, you know, I'm happy where we are at the minute.
Well said. Now, Conor, before we wrap up, you had to sit through a little bit of Liverpool chat there, mate. Tell us, you've actually getting a bit of a reputation now on social media. You and your brother Liam, you have some crack on the Villa podcast. I'm not a Villa fan, as people may have guessed, but I listen to you religiously, and not just saying it because you're a mate of mine. I think it's fantastic. Tell everyone a little bit about the podcast and where they can find it and what you got coming up over the next season.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate you letting me talk about Villa a lot on this podcast as well.
I think they're now my second club because of you.
Yeah, I just on Gav's point, like it is mad that like Liverpool, like you're talking about being pie in the sky, or like your people might think it's pie in the sky. Like in Liverpool, we're fucking amazing. Just the season before last, like, you know, and hopefully this year you won't have two midfielders playing centre back, like, you know, and you almost forget the like of Curtis Jones and boys like that as well coming in, and maybe Naby Keita will come good, who knows? But like Liverpool's default is probably being the best team in the league. So they're in good footing. Like signing those contracts is a good thing. And we will genuinely talk about stuff like that on the Villa podcast as well. We go out after every game, after every Villa game, a lot of whinging. There's going to be a lot more. Like Liam, who does it with me, was just texting me today saying he's not doing it. The season of Grealish isn't there. Like, you know, he can't sit through 42 Aston Villa matches without Jack Grealish. Like, it makes it so much easier. Like, even when you lose, it's just fun watching them. So I imagine there'll be a bit more negative this season. And to be honest, from a Villa fan's point of view, they actually perform better, the podcast, when Villa lose. I think everyone gets excited to hear the depths that we fall into, and they get excited for the meltdowns. But we have a section at the end, so even if you want to skip to the end of the show, where we just talk about more general stuff, like more general football. Most importantly, we go out on Twitter just with our videos on the Villa podcast, so you can catch some of that stuff there. It's funny, there's a lot of Liverpool fans there that are following us, so I just hope that the Villa don't hammer you again this season, that I don't have to slag Liverpool off, so we can keep the mutual friendship going.
Yeah, Dan Jay says in the comments, he says, Colin, I loved your podcast throughout the Euros. You and Liam are legends, I have to say. Yeah, it definitely made the Euros more fun. So definitely do go check it out. Gav, any updates on Siena? People have been asking in the chat. Be good to get an update.
The only update is, and it's going to be this way until November, is that for a lot of people that watch this will know about Siena and the condition she has, and basically she needs to go to America, St. Louis, for basically treatment to help her walk. She suffers from a version of cerebral palsy, but you know, 120 grand is what's needed. I think we're at 60 grand at the moment, and it was our idea to run this through the whole of this season, the next 9-10 months, and see how close we could get to that 120k, and Siena and her family could contact the hospital and the doctor or the surgeon in St. Louis and say, look, we have the money up, when can you fit us in? But surprisingly, last week they got a letter already to say that there's a spot in November. Now that's really tight. That's 12 weeks, you know, to raise 60 grand. But look, we're just going to do what we can. So, you know, Colin runs a podcast. If he wants to shout out about it on his podcast, he can. If anybody else is on a podcast, social media, wherever it is, shout out about it. The link is in the description for our GoFundMe. It's also there. We're trying to virtually sell out Anfield at £1 a ticket, or €1 a ticket, which would raise 50 odd thousand, and we'll put very, very close. So all we can ask is people that look, check out our GoFundMe. If you go into Google and type in Siena Steps GoFundMe, you'll find it. They're at €60,000 at the moment. You can donate there. You can buy a ticket for Anfield for €1. You can buy 10 tickets. You can, you know, sell out the cop. You can do whatever you want. But all we're trying to do is get the likes of me, the four of us on screen, all the lads at the LFC Day Trippers, lads at other podcasts, lads on social media that don't do podcasts, to just continue to spread the word. Because I believe, and again, this might be pie in the sky, but I believe if you tell 20 people about it or put on your social media, that if one of those people donate and tell another 20 and it continues on, the name gets out there more and more, and the word gets out there more and more, and the amount of people that can donate gets bigger and bigger, and hopefully, I'd love nothing more than you know, to come November to, you know, be sending Siena dollars to spend in America, as spend the money from the LFC Day Trippers. I'd love nothing more than that. And I said the other night, helping Keane out a couple of months ago to get his money up was one of the proudest things we've done on the LFC Day Trippers. And this would rank up there alongside it, because at the end of the day, all we do is talk football. That's all we do. We just talk football. And if someone comes along and needs help, whether that's in a mental way or, you know, or a physical way by trying to go and do something for them, that kind of takes over for me. It really does. Like, you know, I do a lot of work with regards to this podcast and setting things up and sorting things out, but this kind of takes over. This is always on my desk in front of me. Siena's thing is always there. So if you can donate, if you can spread the word, that's absolutely great. That's all we're asking for.
Fantastic. Perfect way to finish. Big thank you, as always, to Gav, Keith and Conan. Everybody in the chat, thank you for your comments and your kind messages that you send us throughout the week. It really is appreciated by each and every tripper. We have a massive season planned. So if you don't mind, if you can leave us a like before you leave and a comment under the video telling us what you thought of the show. And if you've got mates that you think would enjoy what we do, do send them a link and get them involved. It's very much a growing community here, and it's yeah, it's really something great to be part of. And it's not just exclusive to Liverpool fans. As I said, we get lots of guests on throughout the season that aren't specific to Liverpool. So we are proud of the community that we're building. We want to try and grow that where possible. So please do leave us a like, leave us a comment, and spread the word wherever you can. So with that, I hope you've all enjoyed the show. Make sure you enjoy the rest of your week, and we will be back with you next Wednesday on the Midweek Fix. All the best.
Sports Social Podcast Network.